Well, we haven't gotten started yet, so.
We haven't started yet.
Well, I am sure to get this out.
All right, well, I guess it's time to start. What we found. I don't know if we have any issues to discuss before we get in.
Meat of the topic. Anybody have anything they want to discuss?
Do you have presenters for next month?
I'll be doing next month too.
Okay.
And probably December as well.
December.
You were here last month, weren't you?
House.
But will you do a presentation then?
No.
Okay. Will there be no presentation? Just a party?
I'll be presenting margaritas.
We'll sing Christmas songs.
Well, if there's going to be a party, there doesn't need to be a meeting. It can just be a party.
Right. We should probably figure out when it's going to be then.
But I don't have any more speakers for this year.
Okay. The 20th would be... a regular meeting day that we opted to do that instead of a meeting.
Hey, oh, no, wait. I remember that I was planning to do something for the winter solstice.
Yeah. Henry volunteered.
To do the party, but I mean to do a presentation.
Okay.
And I probably can have that ready by then. I've got a lot of other things distracting me, but I told you what that was going to be about. We're just going to talk about calendars and celestial motions and what a solstice is and why it moves around.
How long would that be?
It can be half an hour. It can be an hour. What?
You want to do it at the party?
That's what I was thinking. A separate meeting, but we don't have to do anything at all.
Yeah.
But if we were going to do something, because it's the December 20th, it's the day before the winter solstice, I just thought that'd be a fun thing to do.
I think it would be.
Yeah, sounds good. Do it at the party. So the 20th is a Wednesday?
Yeah, the 20th is a Wednesday. That's our December scheduled meeting. It'd be December 20th.
Okay, so at the next meeting, I'll bring a map, and I'll also send that out on the mailing list. All right.
If you need some help, I've done this, 3 years, I think. Uh-huh. 3 years in a row. So
yeah, sure. I can always use advice and counseling and support. Okay,
well, what we're going to discuss today, what I wanted to present was the topic of confirmation bias, which is one of the cognitive biases, those being the collection of things that the mind does to distort reality and change things from one thing to another. Hi, Bobby. And the article I'm going to read to you after we discuss cognitive biases a little bit, and maybe one peripheral discussion, too, that's not related to the rest, is from a man who I found very interesting. His name is Glenn Morton. He's a geologist. He's a old Earth creationist who used to be a young Earth creationist. But in his education and his training, he finally came around to seeing that the Earth can't possibly be 6,000 years old. That's what you'd expect from a geologist. And what he did was he looked back on his own experience as a faith-based thinker, and how he had constructed a confirmation bias around his mind that filtered what he was able to see and what he was not able to see. And so I wanted to talk about that phenomenon a little bit. He went and anthropomorphized the phenomenon by imagining there was a demon sitting in the portal to his mind, choosing what can get in and what can't get in, so that he never saw some things. It's not just that he saw the evidence and rejected it, in his own words. He never saw it.
This was a kind of a metaphor. It wasn't a real deed.
No.
He didn't think it was a real
deed. I said anthropomorphize.
Well,
what I meant was he's turning this cognitive bias into a little creature.
Okay.
And he mentions, he mentions in this talk Maxwell's demon, which has nothing to do with his demon, but he's patterning his after Maxwell's. And I thought it would also be interesting to discuss Descartes' demon, who that topic has nothing to do with this, but it does have to do with the topic of the difference between philosophical doubt and psychological doubt. So I'll just start with that because it's unrelated to the rest of this. Psychological doubt is what you feel when you feel unsure, when something seems wrong. That's what we commonly call doubt. But there was another kind of doubt that Descartes introduced us to, using his demon, and it's called philosophical doubt. That has to be understood. It's not felt. In fact, you can't even, you probably wouldn't come to this notion without the help of some philosopher to explain it to you. And he said, how do I know for sure if there isn't some demon manipulating all of my conscious experience and making things look like there's an external reality out there when there really isn't. And so even though none of us seriously doubts that there's a reality out there, in other words, we don't have psychological doubt about reality, we can understand Descartes' argument and say that he's right. We don't really know. We just have to act as if it's true because we don't know any other way to act. That was his demon. Now I'll get into this a little bit, but before I do, I just want to describe to you two ways of thinking. And this faith-based thinking, and when I say faith, I'm not necessarily talking about religion, because this applies to other kinds of faith-based thinking that has nothing to do with religion. For example, climate science deniers, in my opinion, are faith-based thinkers. And what faith-based thinkers have in common is they've begun with an unjustified belief, and then they begin to see the world. Then they begin to see the world through the eyes of that belief. And they filter the evidence after they've come to, you could call it a conclusion, but I'm calling it a premise. Because it's where you start. A conclusion should be the last, the end, the final thing that happens, the end of the process. And that's the proper way of thinking, taking all the available evidence and evaluating it open-mindedly and dispassionately and going where reason takes you. That's the proper way to think. That's forward thinking. The conclusion you come to is a bona fide conclusion. It is the end of that process. But you can do this completely differently, as you know. You can just start by saying, such and such is true. The earth was created by a god. And then that's all you see. And you're forced to filter whatever's coming into your head. Okay, well, I think we're all familiar with that mode of thinking. But what Morton said that was so interesting to me is that the person who's thinking that way doesn't know that this is happening. He didn't know it was happening. When you're interacting with somebody like that, there's a tendency to feel that they're being dishonest. That they know, that they can see what you can see and should be thinking the same things that you can think. But Morton is going to say, no, that's not true. And it was kind of enlightening to me. I don't think these people are lying. If by lying we mean deliberately being deceptive, I think they believe what they're saying. And when they say, you know, I'm frequently dealing with creationists on the internet, and they'll say, you have no evidence for evolution. And then you give them the evidence, and then they say it again. I don't see any evidence there. Well, you're never going to. Because that's what a faith-based confirmation bias does. And so let's hear what Glenn Morton, this former young earth creationist, had to say. I'll read you what he wrote. It starts out with a little bit that has nothing to do with his topic either. It's Maxwell's demon. Maxwell suggested, and Maxwell, for those who aren't familiar, was a 19th century Scottish physicist who was the one who unified electricity and magnetism. He showed they were the same thing with a series of equations. It was one of the first unifications of the forces. And then that later was, you know, electromagnetism was later unified with the weak electric force. The weak force, I don't know if you know this stuff. And then that was later unified with the strong force, and they're now trying to bring gravity into the fold.
You have to talk to my younger son. He would know this and explain it even further. I have no idea what that
was. Maxwell's demon also was a gatekeeper.
Yes.
That's
right. So you're familiar with him. We're going to talk about him for a second. Okay. Even though he's not part of this discussion, but Morton starts with him.
Very interesting.
It is an art. Yeah. Maxwell suggested a famous demon which could violate the laws of thermodynamics. What this demon's going to do, you know, something that never happens. You put a gas into a container. Let's say it has a partition in the center with an opening in it. However long you wait, it's never going to separate into warm gas and cool gas. That would be a violation of the laws of thermodynamics. But Maxwell suggested a famous demon which could violate the laws of thermodynamics. A demon sitting between two rooms controls a gate between the rooms. When the demon sees a speedy molecule coming his way from room A, he opens the gate and lets the speedy molecule leave the room. And when he sees a slow molecule coming at the gate, he holds it closed. Obviously, when he sees a speedy molecule coming at the gate from the room B, he closes the gate. But when he sees a slow molecule coming from room B toward A, he opens the gate. In this way, the demon segregates the fast-moving molecules in one room from the slow ones in the other. And since temperature of a gas is related to the velocity of the molecules, the demon would increase the temperature of room B and cool room A without any expenditure of energy. And since a temperature difference can be used to create useful work, the demon would create a perpetual motion machine. That was Maxwell's argument. But Maxwell's demon was shown to fail by a physicist named Zeiler, who showed that the demon needed to use light and expend energy to determine a fast molecule from a slow one, and this energy spent to collect information meant that the demon couldn't violate the second law. So he's actually using energy to create energy, and that's not a violation of the thermodynamic law. Okay, the reason I mention this, and this is Morton speaking, the reason I mention this is because I realized tonight that the young Earth creationists have a demon of their own. In a conversation with the young Earth creationist, I mentioned certain problems which he needed to address. Instead of addressing them, he claimed he didn't have time to do the research. With other young Earth creationists, I have found that this is not the case. Like so-and-so, who refused my offer to discuss the existence of the geologic column by stating, it's on my short list of topics to pursue here. It's not up next, but perhaps before too long. And the geologic column, if you're not familiar, just refers to the fact that there are layers that get older and older and older as you go deeper. With other young Earth creationists, they claim lack of expertise to evaluate the argument and thus won't make a judgment about the validity of the criticism. Still, other young Earth creationists refuse to read things that might disagree with them. Thus was born the realization that there is a dangerous demon on the loose. When I was a young Earth creationist, I had a demon that did similar things for me that Maxwell's demon did for thermodynamics. Morton's demon was a demon who sat at the gate of my sensory input apparatus. And if and when he saw supporting evidence come in, he opened the gate. But if he saw contradictory data come in, he closed the gate. In this way, the demon allowed me to believe that I was right and to avoid any nasty contradictory data. Fortunately, I eventually realized that the demon was there and began to open the gate when he wasn't looking. That's really the most remarkable thing about this. Because that just doesn't happen very often. Once you're encased in one of these confirmation biases, you're usually trapped. You're not getting out. Because of the nature of the beast. Somehow, I think it was probably his university education that forced him to confront evidence that without that, he would have just ignored or whitewashed away. But, and of course you probably already know that a lot of religious communities fear college for that reason. It says it turns Christians into atheists.
Makes them think horrors.
Horror. Well, from the perspective of the believer, it is a horror. You gotta have a little empathy for that. You think your kid just went from saved to going to hell because he heard a professor talking about something.
That is not the worst thing. The worst thing is that they no longer pay and support the church.
Yeah. I'm trying to avoid being too cynical. I think we have a theist in the room.
They stay right in university.
We have a what?
You're a believer.
No.
No, you're not? Okay. Well, I just didn't want to offend anybody. I'm not, but I guess we're... Hello.
Hi. He's new.
Well, welcome. What's your name?
Wayne.
I didn't see you come in. I'm sorry. Welcome, Wayne.
I'm a demon that you just can't...
Are you a demon?
Yeah, that's...
I don't see you in the mirror.
He used to be the one that lived in Metro. Yeah.
You have your own demon.
Pretty much.
See Nazi.
See Nazi. Okay. Different meaning of Nazi.
Nazi. Not what I said.
No, I don't know what you meant. Okay. Where was I? Lost my place. But if the demon saw contradictory data coming in, he closed the gate. In this way, the demon allowed me to believe that I was right and avoid any nasty contradictory data. Fortunately, I eventually realized that the demon was there. Okay, I read all that already. However, my conversations have made me aware that each young Earth creationist is a victim of my demon. Warren's demon makes it possible for a person to have his own private facts, which others are not privy to, allowing young Earth creationists to construct a theory which is perfectly supported by the facts which the demon lets through the gate. And since these are the only facts known to the victim, he feels in his heart that he's explained everything. Indeed, the demon makes people feel morally superior and more knowledgeable than others. The demon makes its victim feel very comfortable as there is no contradictory data in view. The demon is better than a set of rose-colored glasses. The demon's victim does not understand why everyone else does not fall down and accept the victim's views. After all, the world is thought to be as the victim sees it, and the demon doesn't let through the gate the knowledge that others don't see the same thing. Because of this, the victim assumes that everyone else is biased. You know, you're interacting with this person, and you think, why can't you see straight? But he's thinking the same thing about you. Or that they're holding these views so that they can keep their job. We hear that a lot. evolutionists are just trying to get grant money and not be fired and not be isolated or marginalized. Or an even more devious attack by my demon, they think that the opponents are actually demon-possessed themselves or sons of Satan. This is a devious demon. He can make people think that the geologic column doesn't exist, even if one posts examples on the internet. He can make people believe that radioactive dating doesn't work, even if you show them comparison of tree rings compared to radiocarbon dating. He can make people ignore layer after layer of footprints and burrows in the geologic column and believe that burrowing can occur and animals can walk around unimpeded during a global flood. He can make people think that the sun is shrinking, that the stars are all within 6,000 light years of the earth, or that God made pictures in that light of events which never happened. He can make people believe that fossils aren't the remains of animals and are petrifactions placed here by the devil. He can make people ignore modern measurements of continental motion, stellar formation, or biological speciation. He can make people believe that 75,000 feet of sediment over an area of 200 by 100 miles can be deposited in a few hundred years. And he can make people believe that Noah trained animals to poop into buckets on command.
Is Noah?
Noah.
What did you say? Noah.
Yeah. Noah made animals poop in the buckets on command.
He had to. What else was he going to do?
I've seen him select the grassy area.
He can make people deny transitional forms which have traced clearly halfway between the two groups. This is a dangerous demon. But one thing that those unaffected by his demon don't understand is that the victim is not lying about the datum. The demon only lets the victim see what the demon wants him to see. And thus the victim, whose sensory input is horribly askew, feels that he's totally honest about the data. The victim doesn't know that he is host to an evil parasite. And indeed, many of their opponents don't know that as well, since the demon is smart enough to be too small to be seen. But unlike Maxwell's demon, Morton's demon doesn't expend any energy. He gets his victim to expend it for him. He can get his victim to expend massive amounts of intellectual energy figuring out how to convince the world that they are wrong. The victim will spend hours reading support.
That the world is wrong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The victim will spend hours reading supportive books or searching through scientific literature, noting only those portions which support the young earth creationist position. And the victim will spend lots of energy trying to convince others to come see things the way they do. Thus, the demon gets his victim to spend its energy to help it spread the infection. The demon drives his victim to go to young earth creationist conventions so that the demon can rest. By making his victim be with those equally afflicted, the demon doesn't have to shut the door or even be watchful. This is because it allows the demon time to rest. Those who try to help the poor victims escape the ravages of Morton's demon wear themselves out, typing emails, explaining data and facts which never get through the demon's gate. After several years of weariness, the philanthropic individual dies of fatigue. This is also a devilish situation. Okay, and that's where he ends.
Well, the question is, did the Creator create the demon?
Okay, now
I would say yes.
Now we're all familiar with. I think we are all familiar with this. Have you ever been in one of these conversations with a creationist who just wants to deny all of evolution, for example? Or let's just take the climate science, just to get away from religion for a minute. What are their arguments? You tell them about CO2 part per million counts going up, they don't see it. You tell them about ice caps melting, sea levels rising, oceans warming, extreme weather events becoming more severe and more frequent.
Happens all the time.
The demon shuts it out. All they see is that, well, they know that climate can change naturally too, so therefore that must be the answer, and you've heard the arguments. And that's this effect. This is confirmation bias. Once you've decided on something, that's what you're allowed to see. I don't know if you remember, but last month, were you going to say something, Chan?
I was going to say something.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that, I find this humorous about these people that have confirmation bias. It's not, we have confirmation bias, big time.
Do we?
I do.
Do you? Where?
I don't want to read stuff that I don't agree with to start with, because I know it's bullshit, and so I just don't read it, you know? That's confirmation bias.
You think so? Well, I wouldn't use that term to describe that, but we should talk about that. I also feel the same way. There are things that just aren't worth looking at.
Right.
I don't know if that's confirmation bias. I'm just confirmation bias won't allow you to see the argument. There are sources I just don't trust. Maybe I told you about this one already. I read something from a creationist source recently that said that man can't possibly have evolved from a common ancestral ape, because all existing apes, and there's four genuses of them, the other three all have 24 pair of chromosomes. You know this argument? And we have 23.
Right.
And if we evolved from them, a chromosome must have dropped out, and that would be lethal. So, end of argument. Well, what's wrong with that argument? If you evaluate that argument on its face value, you can fact check it. You can find out that the chimps, orangutans, gorillas all do have 24 pair of chromosomes, and that we have 23 pair of chromosomes. And you can find that a failure of one of them to reproduce will be lethal. So the argument stands on its merit as being valid. But there's an important piece of information being left out. And to actually evaluate this argument, you have to evaluate the whole field that's being discussed. Does anybody know what the solution to this is?
One of theirs joined together.
Yeah, there was an end-to-end fusion of two of the other great apes' chromosomes into what became human chromosome 2. And the way we know this is there's all kinds of evidence. A normal chromosome has telomeres on either end, and a centromere in the center by which the two chromosomes attach. When you take two chromosomes and fuse them end-to-end, what you get is telomere, centromere, double telomere, centromere, telomere. It's two fused together. And also what you see in this chromosome is the same banding pattern that you find in the two other ape chromosomes. We are apes, so, you know, it's hard to find the language to use. They're brachiating apes, or they're quadrupedal apes. We're different. We're bipedal apes.
The point I was trying to make is kind of a little more subtle.
Uh-huh.
We have confirmation bias. And that's just a matter of... if it's subtle enough, maybe it's okay to weed out, you know, the bullshit. But I'm saying we all need to be a little bit careful about this.
Yeah, I think it's more insidious than you say. I think your argument is that you deliberately don't read something
Absolutely.
To which you know you disagree. I think all of us have a version of that inside, maybe deeper. Some people have it deeper than others, but I think since we're all a sum total of everything we've ever experienced, there's our own version of it, and maybe we think we don't, but I am pretty convinced that we all do somewhere. It may be hidden, it may not show up much, but I think it's there.
I'm just saying.
No matter which side, yeah.
We need to be careful.
Yeah, and I think it's more insidious than, okay, I know this is bullshit, I'm not going to read it.
Yeah.
I'm going to read it, but there's something in me that maybe I learned as a child that still sort of hangs on. I don't know, but I'm not going to speak it for myself, but I know I have it.
And of course,
I'll read something.
Can't read everything.
But, you know, this explains why Republicans typically will not look at any news programs other than presented to them by Fox.
Yeah.
You know, and...
I'm the same way. I'm not going to watch conservative Fox political news. Commentary for the same reason. But I think you and I are talking about different things. You're talking about, I reject this source because I don't... You're saying I won't read it because I already disbelieve it before I read it.
Right.
That would be a confirmation bias, yes.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is there are sources I just don't trust. I won't bother to read them because I just can't trust them.
Well, I would agree with that.
That's what I've been talking about.
Yeah, right.
But still, we have our own confirmation bias. We have a demon sitting on our shoulder that's a gatekeeper that's going to resist me reading something that I think is bullshit, but maybe it's not. Maybe, you know, if a miracle happens, I want to be the first one to know it. I'll convert immediately.
Oh, I think it's going to be too late then.
Really? I'm a psychologist, and I'd like to say something here.
Okay.
People are studied, and they do what they do. So, you know, I don't see a reason for this argument. But here's the more valuable thing, and that is, it seems like somebody has classified all of the, shall we say, all of the religions for their action, and all of the, shall we say, confirmation people in about one dozen classes. And they named them. Now, let me say that I didn't get a chance to copy any of them, but the very best presentation at the Lake Chapala Society this last 6 months was Beth Wan.
And
it
was, what?
Was a slide presentation. Everything up there, if you could take a picture of each class, it would be great. And of course, I couldn't do that. I'm already not so good in memory, and nobody did it.
I don't know what these 12 groups are that you're talking about.
It's a classification which is considered the best.
A classification of what? Religions?
All sorts of, all the different biases.
Let's confirmation biases, okay.
Yeah, yeah, right. Right. Okay. Let's say Buddhism had one, the Christians have another. That is, the modern Christians have another who won't believe. That's another one. And there were more than I expected in between, given as well. And I thought, now that's a brilliant classification. I wish I had it, but I didn't.
Okay.
And maybe on the internet.
Yeah, ask Siri to Google it. I'm sure it's probably somewhere a lot easier to find now than it was back in the day.
I would like to do that, but no.
But I'm really having trouble imagining what we're talking about right now. Are you talking about different ideologies? Are you talking about different types of cognitive biases? Are you talking about
different types of cognitive habits, we'll say. Because, you know, a religion, if it's prominent in an area, maybe 40 to 85%, they're homogeneous in that respect. You know, the majority then are. In other words, it's a different approach than you took. Yours is interesting, but it's kind of theoretical, isn't it?
I don't know. What do you mean by theoretical?
I would think that stating a fact, really. I believe, you know, the confirmation bias is there, and, you know, like what you say. We do have, all of us, you know,
You can train yourself out of that. To have no unjustified beliefs.
Oh, definitely. I can, when I read, you know, your read up first, and I've probably said this once before, but, you know, when I was in the army, in Holland, you know, they have humanistic retreats. They have them for Catholics and for Protestants, you know, they're obviously separate. But anyway, the first one that I went to, there were a couple of guys that were considerably older than I was. And so I am one of those people that say, well, what do you do? Or, you know, I would like to know right away. So they both were Jesuit priests who had actually studied themselves right out of Catholicism.
Pretty common.
Yeah,
atheistic former clergy.
That I didn't know, but anyway, it just, you know, I think it fits with this, with your, what you're saying, your confirmation bias, and that you can get out of that.
You can train yourself out of it. What I discussed, Mr. Howard, what's your first name?
My Canadian first name is Gordon, and here it's Manuel. So use either one.
Gordon is easier.
Yeah, okay. Gordon. No, I discussed only two ways of thinking. One that I consider valid and one that I consider invalid. And the two manners of approaching the world and processing evidence, one is going from the evidence to the conclusion, and the other is starting with an idea that you're going to end up calling a conclusion, but it's actually a premise, and then filtering evidence after the fact to make it fit that. What I call a pseudo-conclusion, because then what you do is you construct an argument with whatever evidence you filtered out, and you make it look like it leads to a conclusion, but that never was a conclusion, it was a premise.
Well, that's interesting, but that's in detail, as it were, I think. You know, going into the detail of the thought, the mental process.
By the way,
it's a little bit like the ancient philosophers who were debating how the mind is performing, and then came psychology. So then the science started in 1870-something. It's interesting. That was interesting.
Okay.
See,
we're going to say to
how would you just say, let's take racism and see how it's related or totally unrelated to confirmation bias.
How it is? Oh, very much so. You're familiar with the book Black Like Me?
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's about a professor from Emory University who was white and successful and then somehow managed to turn his skin dark for a couple of months. And he just saw that he was suddenly perceived completely differently. The same man was seen completely differently. And I remember reading one day in despair, he just sat there on the curb with his head in hands and he heard somebody say, you know, lazy nigger. It doesn't happen to white people. That's confirmation bias. You see what you want to see.
Well, that's
what kind
my
of
issue. What I'm trying to point out is that the racism that makes the presumption that people of other races are inferior.
That's a pseudo conclusion. That's a premise that's going to be offered as a conclusion, and someone's going to give you a whole bunch of reasons why it's true. But those reasons all came after the fact.
And I think there would be a category out of these dozen or so for that one that's offered for that one.
I see it as essentially the same process. Whatever your pseudo-conclusion is, whatever your premise is that you're going to later try to present as a conclusion after sifting through evidence, to me that's all the same process, whatever it is we're talking about. If we're talking about racism, if we're talking about climate denial, if we're talking about creationism, whatever. You start with an idea that you didn't derive.
I understand.
Okay, so it's all the same process to me.
You're on the main action. That is, I understand why you should want to put it in the same, in the detail that you did.
It's the same process, just a different pseudo-conclusion. There's many of them. Well, I try not to interject politics into this discussion, but... we were talking about the American president earlier, and there's another great example of a confirmation bias. You just start by beginning, you begin by saying, this guy's going to be our savior. And that's all you ever see. You don't see anything bad about him, you only see good things. That's a confirmation bias at work again.
But is there not a confirmation bias on the other side that says anything this person does cannot, by its very nature, have any kind of validity at all?
Well, if you do that, that's a bias.
Okay.
But, I mean, I like nothing about the man myself, but I can give you reasons for every bit of it. None of it is just an assumption. None of it's a faith-based thought.
But I'm saying that there are, I believe, people in, not this country, but my country, that take as gospel that this president could never, ever do anything right, no matter what.
Well, that's not a justified belief.
Well, okay, but that doesn't mean...
That's a reasonable explanation, though.
But that doesn't... It doesn't make it any less valid to me.
What? I agree.
The idea that that it's not confined to one particular side.
I'm not saying it is. I've never taken a side here. I'm saying anybody who holds a faith-based belief, if they have a belief that didn't derive from evidence, they're in this category. And I don't care if you're liberal or conservative. I don't care if you're religious or not religious. If you do that, if you jump to conclusions and then justify them after the fact, you're doing what I'm talking about.
Yeah, if you start with a story and then search for evidence, it's quite a bit different than you start with evidence and search for a story.
Exactly. Those are the two modes of thinking or processing information that I'm talking about. And one of them is valid and the other one's not.
Right.
The problem with the faith-based thing is, it is possible to guess correctly, guess something and believe it and it's actually true, even though you don't have any reason to believe it's true. And in that case, you don't really need your faith-based confirmation bias because reality doesn't contradict you. But if you choose wrong, then all these things that tell you you're wrong keep coming at you and you have to deal with them. Yeah. And that's where that's where Morton's demon comes in. He keeps it all out.
So wouldn't it be much more interesting if I said that my interest is, shall we say, strengthening the prestige of scientists in this way, and say that, for instance, this title, this group, or all kinds of groups, are too timid. And I'll give you the example in that, shall we say, about 20 years ago, there was one excellent presentation on TV in Canada and USA, and I'm sure it came from USA, and that was on, shall we say, this person explaining the planets, I believe, and maybe something else too. But he ended the title with some three words, I would say, and I wish somebody would remember that. Like, science is king. I don't know. Somebody that's had that presentation, he had three words, and he ended it, and it was just like, oh boy, you know, science.
And what do you make of that? Why are you bringing that up? You think he's wrong to say that?
Not at all.
Okay. So.
No. I am firmly of the position that a culture can at some time recognize that they better get their evidence as far as they can for the best, closest to the truth. In other words, we shouldn't have a government by representatives that have no science. Oh, here, give me the term for the people that go to the parliament and they try to persuade the members of parliament.
Lobbyists.
That's it. That is just trash as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, but you know what you're talking about has nothing to do with the subject at hand.
That's
right.
That's right, John. You're getting off track a little bit, Gordon. We want to talk about lobbyists in Parliament.
Yeah, let's.
I just want you to have some interest. What I am prepared to say before I go home.
Let's get back to that after we're done with this.
Okay. Okay. I appreciate it.
Okay, sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, we don't want to derail the topic. I forgot where we were. What were you going to say?
No, I mean, I tried to
say. One thing I wanted to say, you get ready to speak too.
Go ahead.
Bias in and of itself is not a bad thing. Only irrational bias is a bad thing. Bias is another name for learning, okay? Yeah. You learn that driving drunk is a bad idea. That's a bias. I have a bias against drunk driving. I have a bias against pedophilia. Those are rational biases. There's nothing wrong with them at all. And the whole set of ideas that I have in my head that I believe are true things are all biases. They're conclusions that I've come to based on experience. There's nothing wrong with biases. It's only when biases are irrational and not derived organically from evidence that we have a problem. So we don't want to just automatically call bias a bad thing.
Yeah, okay. There are elements of society, such as, for example, the practice of law, or the establishment of laws, which probably are not scientifically based, but do represent some sort of bias. In some senses, they're rational. In other senses, they're just arbitrary.
Like what are you?
And the effective lawyer uses confirmation bias to promote that particular cause.
Sure.
And depending upon the opposing position, which may also use a confirmation bias, so it's much more difficult to ascertain I don't want to say even just, the concept of just.
That's the way they pick juries is on the perceived confirmation.
But lawyers are expected to do that. They're expected to just assume, this lawyer assumes guilty, this lawyer assumes not guilty.
Yes.
And they only present what supports their point. That's designed.
I know, but I'm saying that's a use of conscious confirmation.
Okay, but the bigger process is a third party outside of these two attorneys is evaluating both arguments and coming to a judgment that shouldn't have a confirmation bias.
Unfortunately.
Well, they choose them, assuming they have a confirmation bias.
Yes, there's a program on US TV called Bull, if you've ever seen it.
Yeah.
And
what's it called?
His job is to
Bull.
to choose jurors that will subtly have the confirmation bias that he wants so that the person
absolutely
that's defending and apparently I'm assuming this is true makes a pretty good living at it because it's a nice cottage industry.
But if you extend it to representative form of government as well, and legislatures and the bodies that create laws in different countries, it's also quite interesting, not just the semblance of majority, but if there's some thoughtfulness involved, it's still involved.
Yeah, but keep in mind, the people we're talking about now aren't looking for truth.
Yeah, exactly, but...
And this is the process of trying to discover what's true, what I've been talking about. Lobbyists are not trying to discover what's true. Government is not trying to discover what's true.
Like an outsider here, what the confirmation bias put a label on what I've been, the garbage that I get from mostly Republicans, gun control, their rights, what else was there? Gun control and climate change is the worst. And I just know so many Republicans that, because half of my family on my wife's side are, and when I get around them, they're like, they got their heads in the sand, or the ostrich with the head in the sand, they won't listen to any kind of...
That's exactly what we're talking about.
I'm glad I came. My dad's like, come with me. You put a word in there that I'm like, oh man, this makes so much sense. Confirmation bias. It's like a scientific term. I can say, dude, you are like so...
You're so confirmationally biased.
It sounds better than you're full of shit. It's confirmation bias.
Yeah. I've always asked them. How do you fight the Republicans with their illogical statements and whatnot?
The thing is, what can we do about it?
I like it.
I want to ask that. What finally turned him around? Was it the thousand cuts, or was there a revelation?
He doesn't tell us.
He doesn't tell us.
But somewhere in the course of his education, in learning about the Earth, he went from understanding it can't be 6,000 years old, it must be billions of years old. But what I find remarkable about this, not only the fact that he convinced me, I find this guy believable. When he says he didn't know, I believe him. Yeah, and I've been aware of this article for a couple of years now.
Now he's an old Earth advocate.
Now he's an old Earth creationist.
What's other problem?
What's going to get him off the creationist?
I don't know. But still, I think what he said here was very helpful. It gave me a different insight. And I spent a lot of time on the internet, as I've told several of the people here, dealing with these kind of discussions with people. And I'll see all the time people that agree with me calling the other people liars. You're just being dishonest. They're not. They just don't, they believe what they're saying. They think we're liars.
we have our confirmation bias, and we're lying.
Do you ever ask them to explain something?
Well, yeah, quite a bit. Yeah.
And what?
Well, you would be amazed at all the evasions.
Can you explain radioactivity? How does radioactivity work?
I know the argument.
Well, I had that discussion not that long ago. Things were different back then than now. The rates have changed.
The rates have changed?
Yes, the rates.
What evidence is there for that?
Well, evidence isn't part of this, okay? These are just empty claims.
How do you know? How do you know that the rates have changed?
The Lord told me.
Well, there you go.
Okay, well.
God will take care of it.
When I saw this information in the paper, and I saw the term confirmation bias, it reminded me of one of my favorite books when I was a kid, which tells you a lot about me. It was called How to Lie with Statistics. I'm a retired math person.
There's another math
actually
person.
Retired. But the idea that I love this book because you can manipulate statistics without changing them, and because of how they're manipulated, come to a totally different conclusion. And the one that, as a teacher, I remember the school board and the union wanted to negotiate a contract, and the school board wanted to make the case that teachers were getting paid, the steep learning curve. So their statistics manipulated the axes so it looked like their salaries were going up. And the teachers' union took the same set of statistics, manipulated the axes in a different way, and it made it look like their salary was level. Now, both of them were true.
None of them are lying.
Both of them are true. But the idea that lying with statistics is pretty much the norm in this country. You look at, I would maintain that there's bias in how you present statistics, not how you collect them.
I mean, there are two sets of people in this country. there are those that are professors and know the science, and then the rest of us. So
there's a book.
No, there's a room for you to say that.
There's a book called Lies, Damn Lies, and Statistics. Yeah.
Look, I have a minor in statistics, experimental statistics, a PhD minor. So let's say I am not bothered by that.
But this gets back. Go ahead.
I'm more interested in, shall we say, you or somebody here saying how the Scottish people, some scientists start exploring the layers right close to Glasgow or Edinburgh.
Layers of what? Earth?
Glasgow, of Earth, right.
Okay.
And they came to the conclusion differently than the theoretical way, you see. They came by observation. And of course, didn't, shall we say, the famous traveler and the beagle,
Darwin.
Darwin, didn't he draw his conclusions by observation?
Well, he's a scientist. That's what they do.
I'm not running down your thing.
Right? No, the rooster crows every morning and the sun comes up. So therefore, the rooster is the cause of the sun coming up. That's observation. But it needs further study, in my opinion.
Well, getting back to what you were saying about
it led to the hypothesis that the Earth was laid down in time, in different in layers. That's all.
That comes out of geology. Darwin was a biologist. I think it was Lyell, or I forget the names of the great geologists and best. But what I want to say about your thing about statistics is that's very close to what I was talking about when I was talking about human chromosome too. You can present an argument that one cannot find a flaw in it, and it's deeply flawed. And that's what I mean about you need to trust the source. Mm-hmm. You need to trust that the source has the same values that you do, has the same agenda that you do, uses the same methods that you do. You don't necessarily have to come to the same conclusions, but if you have those same ways of deciding what's true, you can find out where you parted ways and go back and look at it and figure out who's right and who's not and that kind of thing. But if you have a different way of processing, if your purpose is to deceive, if you're pushing an agenda, if you're trying to indoctrinate rather than learn and teach, that's a whole different world. And that's what we get out of advertising. That's what we get out of religion. And that's what we get out of political propaganda. These people aren't looking for the truth. They're looking to persuade.
Yeah. A political polling.
It's a different way of thinking, right, and processing information.
And a political poll is a classic example of that. But there it's a question of, you know, selection bias in order to do it. But it's kind of interesting just thinking about the past election, which way the polls were going. And then there were some that they were considered so far out there they weren't worthwhile, and yet they turned out to be correct.
Putin.
In terms of the
outcome. All you got to say is Putin.
Well, I think what was most notable the last election.
I'm talking about the polling. You know,
people say how wrong it was. But polling doesn't take into account hacking voting machines.
No.
It doesn't.
Yes, that's true. But the polling was correct. It's just the difference in the sample was nowhere near large enough to find the difference that it took to make. The election was so close that they would have had to have a huge sample to find that difference.
Well, it's the same thing in medicine.
The difference.
Yeah, the difference was so small.
I believe that's probably possible.
But there's no way the polling was fine.
What happens, and Stephen knows this in medicine, is that there are certain things that everybody agrees upon, and they're just shown to be true. And whenever there's controversy, they turn to numbers of different studies, and finds that the studies themselves basically don't have a large enough sample size, or haven't looked as many parameters, so people turn to what's called meta-analysis.
Right.
In which case, the sum total of all the studies may point in a certain direction. But it's still not clearly determined that this is the absolute truth of the situation.
Well, medicine's a special problem, because they don't seem to be able to get much right. You know, what doesn't change? You know, in the hard sciences like physics, I mean, they may rename Pluto from a planet to something else, but it doesn't go away.
It's there.
It's still there. In medicine, all the ideas change about every week. Eggs are in, eggs are out. Salt is in, salt is out. it just never ends, does it?
Did you see the thing on China?
No.
That the Chinese scientists are buying, they're buying peer reviews from their colleagues.
Sure.
So So
they're paying them off.
So all of a sudden, their articles are being peer reviewed by all these people who have no idea what they're talking about, and they're going up in the ratings, and all of their not all their studies, but a huge number of Chinese studies are totally fraudulent because nobody's ever looked at them.
What studies of what?
Mostly medical studies.
Well, once you know that, you don't trust the source anymore.
Exactly.
You know, there's a famous fallacy, an informal fallacy called the genetic fallacy. And it goes like this, that you discount an argument because of the source. If Bob said it, it can't be true. That's the genetic fallacy. But we're not doing that here, or at least I'm not doing that. When I talk about rejecting the source, I'm not saying the argument is wrong. I'm saying I don't trust it. I'm saying that I would just never believe it,
further research.
Right, and that's not a fallacy. That's once I know what your values are, and once I know what the Chinese values are, once I learned that the FDA was concealing important information, I stopped listening to it. I don't know if you remember, there's some years back they concealed some information about Vioxx, and it was cardiotoxic. And I'm sending Vioxx samples to my brother-in-law in Michigan who has a heart problem. And when I discovered that, I resented the hell out of that.
Yeah.
And I said I'm not prescribing any new drugs anymore. I mean, this agency is tainted. It cannot be trusted. It doesn't mean that what they say is wrong. It just means it can't be believed. Right.
But there's a fallacy in that, which is you're discounting any possibility. You're discounting any possibility that some of the information may be valid and worthwhile.
No, I know some of it may be true.
I'm not discounting
that possibility. I'm just saying I need to get the information from another source.
Right.
Because you know what? There's nothing known only to the Chinese.
There is nothing known other source but the pharmaceutical companies who are trying to sell the drug. I mean, really?
But they're not the FDA. They may have they may have some control over the FDA, but they're not the FDA. Well, and I don't really need to know the mechanism. I just need to know you either are a trusted source or you're not. If you're a trusted source, I'll read you open-mindedly. If you're not a trusted source, I won't read you at all.
But can you say that a source can be trusted sometimes and not others?
No.
Or do you discount everything that comes out of it because of something that you don't trust? That's also confirmation bias. That's saying I'm not permitting myself to allow some investigation of the particular situation, individual.
Zero or one.
I wouldn't call that confirmation bias. There are biases that aren't confirmation biases, and as I explained earlier, some of them are valid. They're rational. That's like saying if somebody comes over to my house and steals, but they might not steal every time. Should I let him in?
Else?
No, you're not coming in.
Put him in every third time because the pattern has been.
Like I said, we either share values, methods, and agenda, or we don't. And I said we don't have to share conclusions. We don't have to agree on ideas, but we do have to agree on how to get to the truth. Because if your method of getting the truth isn't mine, frankly, and I don't mean you personally, but frankly, I'm just not that interested in what you have to say.
Well, you know, with the FDA thing, though, it's slightly different. Like, for example, the New York Times. I basically trust the New York Times. But do they get every story right?
I've lost faith in them twice now.
No, they haven't.
But I would definitely read the New York Times or Fox News.
Yes.
Definitely. They're more right.
I see what you're saying, relatively speaking.
So the same thing.
Confirmation bias.
Right.
New York Times, the Washington Post, they like them.
Yeah, but Fox News, I wouldn't believe what they say.
But why do you call that confirmation bias?
Well, I would say the same thing now with the FDA. I would definitely read the FDA over the Chinese Huang Sai News medical service.
Did you just make that up?
I made that up.
Okay.
The
Huang Sai News service. Okay.
So again, it's a probabilistic thing. You know, you gotta.
Well, I agree.
It's not a 0-1.
I agree. There are degrees, but I'm only going to go to trusted sources.
Are there any?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I got to jump in, but
there
wasn't. Yeah. We actually saw a study.
Oh, sorry.
We actually saw a study. Bobby and I were involved in this that talked about news sources and degrees of trust based upon political orientation, so that. I trust them all the time, I trust them most of the time, some of the time I never trust them. Then I am a staunch conservative, a moderate, a liberal, anarchist, and we didn't go to that. And it listed about 20 different sources of media information. And clearly, the liberals always trusted New York Times, Washington Post, et cetera, et cetera. The conservatives trusted Fox and
Breitbart.
One America News.
Breitbart.
And Breitbart. No, seriously.
Drudge Report.
However, the one that crossed over the most, that gained the most trust from both sides, believe it or not, can you guess what it was?
No.
Great. National Enquirer.
Not National. No. It's being facetious.
PBS.
The National Enquirer.
No. The Wall Street Journal.
Really? Huh. Crossed over.
Wall Street Journal.
It's very conservative.
They had more people. Even liberals trusted the Wall Street Journal. Huh. Obviously, much more.
I would more than Fox News anyway.
Yeah, right.
It's still questionable.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, regarding confirmation bias and sources, for example, when it comes to all things, you know, regarding the age of the earth and or evolution, would you generally not distrust or completely discount someone like Answers in Genesis?
Yes, I do distrust it completely.
And I think that's valid and not confirmation bias based on if you have, you know, done enough reading and, you know, learned about the people behind it. Now, coming from, you know, 40 years of being a young earth creationist, they were basically covered. So, you know, you talk about the cognitive processes going on. When you are presented with scientific evidence and facts, mm-hmm. To maintain the young earth creationist position, you have to, in some way, rebut those facts. You know, either in you're being confronted with them or you just read them somewhere.
You said covered.
Right, they are providing cover for creationism.
Yeah, that point of
by view. Portraying themselves as scientific, and having knowledge and giving, like we were talking about earlier with the statistics and things like that, shaping and and sometimes, you know, completely making things up, but taking existing facts. Just dropping little hints of doubts in there.
I agree with you.
We'll probably find out soon how wrong they are, those evil evolutionists, etc. That's their role, basically, in Christianity, inside of, you know, fundamentalism.
Their role is to make unbelievers comfortable in the face of the cognitive dissonance that comes with choosing the wrong belief and having to deal with the evidence.
And it's just to reinforce the confirmation bias.
Apologetics is for the unbeliever.
Who is it you're talking about?
Answers in Genesis, Ken Ham's website.
Oh, okay.
But and I'll tell the creationists when they bring their apologetics to me, I go, "That's just for you. That's to make you feel comfortable. That's useless here. Don't bother with that. Because that is its purpose." And you're saying what I'm saying. That's not confirmation bias. We both reject that site. That's right. Not a confirmation bias. That is a bias, but it's rational, and it's based upon evidence. And I can support that position because I could go to the site and find all kinds of stuff that I considered worthless.
It's interesting too that at least in the internet realm, if you go out and do any research on this or look about whether it's politics or religion or science, if you look at confirmation bias, you can lob that charge against the other side. They'll throw it right back, and there seems to be an acceptance out there in general that confirmation bias is a universal human psychology issue, and that everyone is subject to it. Therefore, it's almost their conclusion seems to be, well, therefore we can never really know, and sort of we'll have to agree to disagree. However, you know, just using myself as an example, coming from the young earth creationist position, over to a complete, absolute, 180-degree rejection of that, an acceptance of all of the known science and geology and evolution and everything else, I feel like I have broken out of confirmation bias.
Yes.
How can you say I have confirmation bias if I won't accept some supposedly new, evidence for a young earth, if in fact I have already spent, well, in this case, 4 years, but, you know, a lot of time steeped in all of that information and have changed my mind? Am I not free from confirmation bias, at least on that topic? And I would posit that I am, in fact.
I think you're open-minded. I don't know if anybody saw the September OHO, but I was sitting in a business office and thumbing through it, and I read an article about O.J. Simpson.
Right,
anybody
right.
see that?
Two articles. Yeah.
There were two of them. It was the second one I was talking about. You know what? That changed my mind.
In the same magazine.
In the same issue? Yeah, but the second article just went on about stuff about ice cream that should have been melted and blood that shouldn't have been wet and stuff like that. Now, if those are facts, I would have to do fact-checking first.
Yeah, that's the trick.
But if those are facts, he makes a compelling argument that Simpson was not guilty. Well, you know, I don't know if he's guilty or not, but I'm only mentioning that there's no confirmation bias here. I'm willing to be persuaded by a compelling argument. Just make one.
What about the 911 so-called confirmation?
Conspiracy theory?
The evidence against Simpson's words is so overwhelming that how can he...
Well, I didn't... I don't really know the case that well because I ignored it mostly. Watched one TV movie.
I watched every second.
Did you?
Well, I'm from California. Actually, I was in Portland at the time, but retired, so I could do that.
I was in San Diego.
You want to listen to Mr. Howard's suggestion?
What is it?
Well, that's what Mr. Howard's going to say.
All right, thank you. I felt from the beginning that, I was at one of the beginning sessions, and it was in a big hall, and they were filled up, and we went around and said why we're here, each one, and... I said to myself, well, free thinkers, and then there are the skeptics, and we've got so many divisions. I guess I should apologize in that I didn't stay on receiving emails very long because there were too many coming out. And I was in Canada.
The electrons don't go all the way up there.
It's colder up there.
The rockets end away.
Take longer to get to that.
We often do a round robin, introduce yourself if there's new people. And this could have been a good time to do that, but maybe next time.
What's your name?
Wayne.
Wayne. When was it here when we started?
The chance. It might be possible in the next month, but I kind of doubt it because I'm going to be leaving.
What might be possible?
To go home. That I would be here.
Oh, okay.
As early as can, and it could be the middle of November.
Well, you're always welcome to join us. Any other comments?
Well, just on that point, some old-timers here... You've heard our stories so many times that we sometimes just kind of forget to introduce ourselves or
yes, you're my only fellow Canadian here, I believe. I think everybody else is an American as far as I know. Is that
well,
true?
Well, I could start with 5 minutes, but if you would accept
that. What's that?
I could start with 5 minutes.
You could start with 5 minutes.
He wants to make a little presentation.
What?
I want to encourage... the scientists above all, because I feel it's pitiful that there is, shall we say, a group that's asking you to donate to the science. And it's why it's national in USA. I think that's a pity. In other words, what I'm saying is, be brave. All these people who, shall we say, will say, I want the truth with the evidence. That means it comes from science. It comes from experimentation or measurement. I think it's a pity that they should be, shall we say, just a bit... shall we say, so kind to all the other groups in our society.
So what are you suggesting?
I'm suggesting that every organization that can, including this one, kind of put the word science in somewhere. And there are lots of scientists, and I drew a little chart for, shall we say, types, major types of science. And then, well, I can just read it off. You know, proposed down to entered, that area, whether it's physiology or something in,
So what would you like people to do? What are you suggesting that we do?
Feel like you should be, as it were, strong supporters of the science, that's of the using science wherever possible.
Well, you need to talk to other people besides the ones in this room.
We all are.
Yeah, you're talking to people, but you need to talk to the faith-based thinkers that just have no interest in evidence or science, and you're going to be wasting your time when
no,
you do.
No. I would waste my time. Okay. I went into their literature, and I see...
Whose literature? Whose literature did you go into? What are you talking about?
I don't remember his name.
Okay.
But he Green, I think it is. He's done a couple little books for the Christians. I've looked in there.
I think you may be more effective if you approach it with the idea of all we're asking you to do is use the scientific method. All we're asking you to do is statistical process of investigation. All we're asking you to do is have your research peer-reviewed and not just... And that might, you might get more, not converts, but at least more agreement than maybe saying, you know, I'm right and you're wrong. Not that you're saying that, but it
all
comes
right.
that way.
All right, that's too slow. I have broken this down into, shall we say, let it be that there is a publication which, shall we say, codes the different investigations that are going to be made. Pharmacology or whatever. Proposed official. It's proposed. Is it printed? Well, that's one category. Initiated, that is, it's entered. Accepted for experimentation. Completed, and it's in print. Published, and where? Because, you know, as a scientist, most of my life, from the time I was 22, I believe. I'm sorry, but I am old and I had an illness, and so I'm slow. Just pardon me, if you can. I appreciate the kind of time that scientists may need to spend to just get one of these positions or a science that they're interested in, just to find it. You know, otherwise, you're okay. Looking through.
I'm all for promoting science. Is that your point?
Good. No.
Well, no, I think we're straying away from what we've been talking about. I'm not really sure what we're talking about now, Gordon.
Well, sure. We're straying away.
What?
Thank you. That's what I say thank you for.
For what?
You're straying away.
No, you are.
You're straying.
All right.
No, we
have a topic. Anybody else want to talk about cognitive bias?
It's deep inside of my, shall we say, goal that everybody who can support the science and the scientific method should get together. Like
about wildlife
the Unitarians.
Funds.
The Unitarians
supporting those?
Mentioned here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I found them very good in, shall we say, openness to science and bright people. Bright.
Yeah, and the support of that, I think, you know, that this is, we believe in this structure. I think that is something that could at least make some people marginally aware of the fact that there may be confirmation bias. We're not asking you
we're
to
not,
change
not
your opinion.
I'm not talking about confirmation
bias. Well, I am.
Yes, but we are. But we are, and that's the purpose of this meeting.
I know. Can
well, then
I
let's
have,
get back on that.
No. Can I have 5 minutes?
Well,
you can't. You've already spoken
it's
your
a
piece.
Filibuster.
You have to get to a salient point much quicker than that.
You should have an enticing title instead of what you have.
Okay, I'll think about titles a little bit more carefully next month. Okay.
Confirmation bias, I thought was pretty good.
Yeah,
I want to
really
say
describes.
One more thing. Ken Crosby, thank you for listening in.
All right.
He's our founder.
I think he's referring to free thinkers, right? Lakeside free thinkers, rather.
I don't know what we're talking about anymore.
But I think
I don't. I'm sorry, I don't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
He doesn't
want to
know. You're a physical
scientist. No, Gordon, let's not be confrontational. But I can't follow you. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know why you're talking about it. Okay? Does anybody?
To have universal across all the nations with some title that indicates that they put science first, evidence first. That's all.
Okay. Well, that's a great idea. La Quinta, por favor.
Okay.
Sorry. Oh, yeah. Gracias.
It's okay.
Sorry, so I don't.
And it's too much for me to do before I die. So
okay.
I need some help.
Stephen, I have one more
yes.
little technical point that may be obvious, but it's been on my mind. So Martin's demon, Maxwell's demon, that's just another way of saying confirmation bias.
Well, not Maxwell's demon, but Martin's demon, yes.
Yeah. What's the difference between Maxwell's and Morton's?
Well, Maxwell's has to do with psychology, and Morton's has to do with psychology, and Maxwell's has to do with physics. It's not related to confirmation bias.
About demons.
Oh, it's not?
Yeah.
Well, he called it that.
I was just giving you a couple of demons from history.
What I want to mention is, you mentioned earlier, is that there's a distinct danger in that. And I have always been sort of a practical person. And so my first thought is, what are we going to do about it? What can we do about it?
About confirmation bias?
Well, yeah, I mean, confirmation bias, I accept as, you know, as
so which
the,
it,
but I
mean,
but the
you
thing
need
is
to watch out for it.
That's right. I mean, how can we make people aware that they have this bias? I mean, if they, you know, I'll tell you where I'm coming from. One of my sons, you know, runs a big company, and I mean, he owns most of it, and so he has like 250 employees, and I talked to him about healthcare and all that, and you know, and all the advantages of single payer and the whole thing, and boy, did he come back with, and I don't know what the hell he was talking about, but all kinds of convincing to him at least arguments why it isn't a good idea.
Why? What isn't a good idea? Healthcare?
Single payer healthcare. I mean, and you know, and it's such an obvious thing because you know he sits there complaining to me, you know, occasionally about all the work that he has to do, you know, in order to figure out what goes where and all that and how much it's costing him and so on and so forth. And so he says, why don't you just support that and, you know, single payer healthcare? Because that rolls the whole thing off your, off your shoulder.
Well, lower his costs.
Yeah.
Well, not only everybody's costs, but the thing is that the argument, I mean, it's like, it's so simple. I mean, you know, I can almost touch
what
it.
What country is his business in?
In Michigan?
America?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. No, I don't know if that's America, but
Michigan.
It's Michigan. Yeah.
It's another country.
Yeah, it looks like another country there. You know, and he's where Ford is from.
He's a conservative. I already know that.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't know how
well,
he got there.
That's how they think.
He's my son, and I don't know how the hell he
that's
got
there.
That's
how they think. That's another confirmation bias. They've been convinced by political commentary to have certain attitudes that they didn't come to organically, and
well,
they came
was,
to support
evidence.
He was
convinced by his father-in-law, basically, because the father-in-law started the business, and you know, and he made millions of dollars, and And so, you know, and that's something I cannot even come close to, you know. So I guess the money is what convinced him.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that this is where a lot of Republicans come from. You know, if you cannot make money, you're no good. You don't count.
That is a value with a lot of conservatives.
So yeah. Can I say something?
Yes, buddy.
Thank you. So we all agree we all have demons.
Some more than others, I hope.
And this gentleman wants to know what to do about it. Yeah. So here is what I think. And that is, we don't accept other people's biases. We simply don't. You want to argue, fight, tell them you're stupid, you don't understand. So maybe one of the ways to ameliorate all the differences and hostility and prejudices is to say, you know, there's a kernel of truth in what you say. And there is a possibility that there's more than one side to a story. And I know that sounds very idealistic, but I listen to people argue and they don't listen to each other. They immediately discount what that other person says or feels. That's what's wrong, in my opinion, because in this world today. How to figure that out is to listen and not want to argue and dismiss other people's ideas.
I can believe that for politics. I can listen to Republicans, but religious people, I just can't deal with it. Because it's just anti-science.
Well, just don't say anything.
Well,
believe what they want.
Yeah, no, I leave them to
their proselytizing. Leave them to their.
There are some atheists that believe, and I'm close to one of them, that you have a responsibility to correct them when it comes to that, because it's so important. They're indoctrinating their children. They're indoctrinating other people around them. It's a menace.
Well, it actually is.
My daughters believe in God, and then my daughter says, maybe that's what's wrong with you, Dad, your lack of
faith.
Well, the truth is that there are
that's what's right about me.
Religious services are increasing in great numbers all around the world and in the U.S.
It's tough.
You know, I think when it comes to religion, if people believe in God or not, it doesn't make any difference to me. I evaluate a person by what he does or she does, and if they feel comfortable in believing in whatever, you know, that's their business.
Yeah,
I mean, sure. I don't give it.
I agree with
that. I do too. I don't really care what they believe.
No, right.
I just care
exactly
what they do.
Yeah.
I want to contribute one statistic, which is outstanding. And that is, it comes from a collection of the social colleges, and they took a census, and 97% of them would rather not go with the Republican because they have this against the Republican because they're interested in finding out a better way for, shall we say, the social services, they're interested. And so they want to do it. They want to do it, as it were, as basic as possible. 97%, now I never saw such a statistic on anything that was so high.
You look like you're leaving.
Yeah, I just wanted to know.
Great topics.
Okay.
I was just
okay.
Put the word out of my mouth.